listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and back from Seattle. It's nice to see Dan Sisson. Dan and I have a new book out. It's called The Revolution of 1800, and it lays out how what the Republican Party is doing right now with their obstruction of the Obama administration would have been considered treason by the founders and by the founders of this country and the framers of the Constitution. And it's really quite a remarkable book, The Revolution of 1800. And it really was, you know, Jefferson himself said that, you know, the election of 1800 genuinely was a revolution, because John Adams, our second president, who Jefferson defeated in that election, Adams was running for re-election, had been taking the country down this road toward essentially a tyranny. I mean, you know, toward right-wing rule. And the people said, no, no more. Undo that Alien and Sedition Act. Stop throwing newspaper editors in prison just because they write editorials that the president didn't like. And, you know, on it goes. So it worked. Hillary this weekend was in Iowa. You pretty much go to Iowa because you plan on running for president. You know, people don't go to Iowa because they want to eat some corn that's going to be made into ethanol or something. I don't know. You know, it's a nice state and all that. I'm not dissing Iowa, but you know, when a politician who everybody says is running for president is going to goes to Iowa, I mean, she was there arguably campaigning for Tom Harkin, but yeah. And I debated whether or not to even bring this up, but I don't know if this is a topic that you want to talk about or not, or even hear about. But have you ever had a horribly embarrassing experience? And this happened to me over the weekend, and what's funny is at the time I was most embarrassed when it was all over, and I was thinking back on it. Here's what happened: I was on the West Coast, and my brain was on East Coast time. And I had done this thing for Yes Magazine on Saturday, and I went to sleep around 8 o'clock, which would be 11 o'clock East Coast time. Fell asleep around 8 o'clock, and 8 p.m. And I had to get up early in the morning. I had a 6 a.m. flight home, and I woke up about 10:30, quarter to 11, something like that, and had to go to the bathroom. So got up and with kind of one eye open, I was trying to keep from totally waking up. Walked over to the door to the bathroom, opened it, stepped through. The door behind me very, very quickly closed. And here I am standing in my underwear in the hall on the fifth floor of the Rosetto, whatever it was, in this hotel in Seattle. And, you know, this happened to me once before, maybe 10, 12 years ago, only that time it was a fire alarm. And I was wearing a towel, and so were a lot of other people. But at least there was, back in those days, there used to be a phone on the floor where you could pick up the phone and say, help, I'm locked out, come up and let me back in. No phone. In fact, the only thing I could see that I could do anything with was the fire alarm. And I thought, if I pull the fire alarm, not only am I going to be standing out here in my underwear, but I'm going to be arrested standing in my underwear. So I got in the elevator, and I went down to the lobby. And it's amazing. People looked like, uh-oh, and I think everybody understood what was going on, and they would just move away. You know, it was like, let's not embarrass this guy. Walked up to the front desk, asked the attractive young woman there for a new key. She gave it to me. I went back to my room and went back to sleep. So my plea to hotels, including the one that I stayed in, I'm going to have to track down the name of it, but whatever it was, is at least put a phone on each floor. So if something's going on that floor, I mean, what if it had been an assault? What if there was some kind of serious problem going on that floor? I really think hotels should have phones. So enough said. Anyway, that was my weekend. Oh man. So Hillary Clinton running for president. Oh, the Washington Post. Did you see this thing? This Fire Dog Lake has a nice piece on this. Washington Post makes massive factual mistake in editorial against pot legalization. There's all these guys who are running around talking about how evil pot is and how it's not working in Colorado and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out that a lot of them are actually funded by the alcohol or the pharmaceutical industries, principally the pharmaceutical industry. Very, very wealthy industry. Lots of lobbyists, lots of shills for them. It's sort of like the guys, you know, a substantial amount of the time, frequently, when you see some general on TV talking about, you know, Syria or ISIS or whatever, the general also is on the board of directors of two or three defense contractors or is a consultant to them. And, you know, they're double, triple dipping. And they have an interest in war. Oh, gee, yeah, let's have war. Let's this kind of thing. And I just... It's wrong. And in this Washington Post editorial, apparently they didn't realize that pot got decriminalized recreationally in 2012 rather than 2014, and that marijuana use among teens has dropped since the state decriminalized it, and so have car accidents. But because they got their years wrong, they got their statistics wrong. The other story that I found very interesting, now this is being denied by the White House, but how do they know? I mean, you know, we've got these so-called moderate Sunnis in Syria that we're going to support, because if you're going to overthrow Assad, Assad is an Alawite, he's a Shia. If you're going to overthrow Assad, which ISIS is trying to do, you know, it seems like we should be supporting Sunnis. Maybe I can't explain why. Well, the moderate Sunnis, two things happened over the weekend. One, they cut a deal with ISIS, a non-aggression pact, because they know which way the wind's blowing. They said, you know, we're not going to fight you. You don't. You fight us. So much for our Anbar awakening moment, right? You just can't pay people off and say, hey, suddenly shift your loyalty to us. When we're a different religion, we look different, we talk different, we dress different, we live in a different part of the world. We're not them. But the other thing is, apparently Stephen Sotloff, the second guy who got beheaded, he had originally been captured by the moderate Sunnis in Syria, and they sold him to ISIS so that he could be beheaded on television. There's like this active business, this active trade in Western hostages, and ISIS is on a buying spree. Apparently they paid $50,000 for this guy, according to news reports. Now, again, this is being disputed, but it's really quite remarkable. Really quite remarkable. In our third hour, by the way, two hours and 45 minutes from now, Katrina Vandenhoevel is going to drop by. Or an hour and 45 minutes from now, the editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. And we are going to discuss in some depth the situation in Ukraine. And we're going to have on the widow of firefighter Charles Gabarini, one of the 343 firefighters killed on 9/11. They've got a new film out from the ground up, which is interesting. So... Lots of stuff going on. And Lindsey Graham apparently melted down over the weekend. Now, I missed this. I was on a plane. But what, did he start crying on television or something? He didn't start crying. Okay, the descriptions I've heard, it's oh, my God, they're going to come and get us. They're going to kill us. We got to do something. No, they're just a small group of crazy people. I mean, you know, even 9/11 was a one-off. Come on. It's time for the... You know, that home of the brave thing, we need to start taking that seriously.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, and have you ever had a more embarrassing moment than showing up in the lobby in your undershorts? We'll be back with your calls. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And are we broadcasting television, Jim? Oh, we are. Okay. Good. Okay. Yeah, no, I understand. Okay. Dan, watching Free Speech TV in Commerce Township, Michigan. Hey, Dan, thanks for watching Free Speech on Dish Network. What's up?
Well, you know, I I couldn't agree more with your analysis of ISIS and the kind of media coverage. It's funny how, boy, you know, go to war, go to war. Now he wants to go to war, which is a huge mistake. Now it's, how dare you take us to war? I did watch something very, very funny yesterday. I just happened to get up around 7 in the morning and turn on, of course, one of my favorite cable shows. Not the NBC-related one.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about going to war, and there was somebody who was a reporter who was stationed. Of course, they had a whole panel of people, like they always do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the persons was out in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about how they needed to go to war and we need a partner. Instead of saying the Peshmerga, she said Depeche Mode, which is a rock band from the 90s.
Oh.
And she didn't catch it. And, of course, none of the other pundits caught it either. Now, I don't know if they had noticed it or it just completely flew by them. But, I mean, that's just silly. And, of course, it was all negative.
Yeah, yeah. All negative in what regard? Negative against going to war or negative against the president?
No, all negative against Barack Obama. And in every way, shape, or form, they could find negativity. And it's just, you know.
Well, you know their slogan. If it's Sunday, it's time for Meet the Republicans.
Oh, yeah. It's been like that for years. And, you know, I take care of my mother for the last few years. So all I do is watch the media just because I'm fascinated by it. And I've never seen anything like this in my life. I have never. They have panels talking about the panels that were just originally on, the panelists.
Right.
You know, they have pundits for the pundits. It's just ridiculous. And, of course, because Barack Obama's got low ratings, they're just piling on and piling on because they're, you know, everybody wants to be Fox News now. So.
Right. And God forbid they talk about Congress's low ratings because all that money.
Not a word.
All that. Well, you know, $1 billion is going to be raised and spent in this midterm election, this congressional election that's coming up in a month and a half. 2 months, and where's that money going to go? It's going to go to the networks and to the TV stations.
Sure.
I mean, so, you know, they're looking at getting seriously, seriously rich. Did you see, I didn't catch the weekend talk shows this weekend because I was on that airplane flying home. I understand Bernie Sanders was on. In fact, I saw the clip of that on YouTube. And he did a pretty good job, although they wanted him to talk about Hillary, which it's like, really? But was there any pushback on the war that was not just, you know, trashing the president?
No, it was all just trashing the president. And it's like you said, I just happened to catch a few minutes of Morning Joe this morning, and he just went on a screaming tirade about Hillary Clinton. How dare her not admit that she's not running for president, what a coward she was, and that's why everyone hates politicians, and just went on and on. And of course, everybody on that show agrees with him, you know, they just naturally agree with him.
Yeah. Well, you do that if you want to get invited back. Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Defending America from the Weapons of Mass Deception. Tom Hartman here with you, and welcome back. This whole thing in the Middle East, this is, you know, please don't throw me in that briar patch, right? I mean, that's what's going on here. Although they're saying, please throw me in the back. These ISIL guys or ISIS, the Islamic State, whatever you want to call it, Islamic State, they're begging us to send soldiers over so that they can have video of blowing up soldiers. I mean, these guys are, you know, they've really got their social media thing down, and the media is playing along with it. And now everybody's like, oh, we got to get them. We got to go get them. They represent an existential threat. To whom? Right? They represent a threat to the Iraqi government. Let the Iraqi government deal with them. They got billions of dollars coming in from oil revenue. Do they really need us and our money? There's some very good air forces in the region. The Saudi Air Force is huge. or Saudi Arabia doesn't really want to do all that much against ISIS because they're all Alawites. They're all so. Anyway, here's what Lindsey Graham had to say over the weekend. Shano found the clip. Here it is.
The first thing I want to tell the American people, from my point of view, it is our fight. It is not just their fight.
Really?
This is a radical Islamic army that's pushing the theory of a master religion, not a master race like the Nazis. This is not about bringing a few people to justice who behead the innocent in a brutal fashion. It's about protecting millions of people throughout the world from a radical Islamic army. They're intending to come here. So I will not let this president suggest to the American people we can outsource our security, and this is not about our safety. There is no way in hell you can form an army on the ground to go into Syria to destroy ISIL without a substantial American component. And to destroy ISIL, you have to kill or capture their leaders, take the territory they hold back, cut off their financing, and destroy their capability to regenerate. This is a war we're fighting. It is not a counterterrorism operation. This is not Somalia. This is not Yemen. This is a turning point in the war on terror. Our strategy will fail yet again. This president needs to rise to the occasion before we all get killed back here at home.
Lindsey, respectfully, put a sock in it. I mean, this is absurd. Why, by his logic, right, you've got a radical fundamentalist group that is Muslim, that is Sunni Muslim, a radical fundamentalist Sunni Muslim group who is terrorizing the people that they occupy, who's killing people with impunity. Boko Haram in Nigeria, and now they've moved into Western Uganda and other, you know, parts of Central Africa. Central and East Africa. Boko Haram is larger than ISIS. They are, in, if not more radical than ISIS, identical to ISIS in terms of their positions with regard to the how cheap human life is and how women are not fully human. Women are the products, properties of men. I mean, look at it. They kidnap hundreds of girls from girls' schools, and not just the one that made the big press. They've been doing this for quite some time, kidnapping girls and selling them into sexual slavery or giving them to their fighters as gifts. You want to go at, you know, come on, Lindsey. You want to take on a right-wing Muslim group that, you know, hates us and hates everybody? Go after Boko Haram. But see, I don't even think that's our fight. These are regional wars. These are regional battles. These are regional actors. These are regional bad guys. You know, if Tim McVeigh, God forbid, had stayed on the lam successfully after he blew up the Oklahoma federal building and killed hundreds of people, including all those kids who were in the daycare center in there, and then went on to blow up a couple more buildings, and then went on to do, you know, other... Should we ask Canada for help? I mean, should Europe be putting together a coalition to help us with right-wing fundamentalist Christian terrorists in the United States? They've certainly killed enough people. Ask George Tiller. Oh, you can't. He's dead. That's right. The right-wing Christians killed him. We have an active terrorist movement inside the United States. It's metastasizing. It's growing. You saw the tip of it at the Bundy Ranch. Isn't that something for us to deal with? Isn't this something that the United States should deal with? And to the extent that we've got a problem of narco-terrorism or people-smuggling terrorism that crosses borders like the United States and Mexico, isn't that something for the U.S. and Mexico to deal with? Does France really need to start airstrikes along the Mexican border or wherever, you know, in Michigan where the Michigan militia are hanging out? This is a regional fight. And the countries in the region are not all that enthusiastic about the battle. I would dump this in the lap of the Saudis, say, you guys helped create all this. Good luck.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You say, oh, what about the city sitting on the mountain, you know, starving? Well, cool. You know, humanitarian aids and effort, good. Eh, maybe some airstrikes, but no, no war. You know, welcome back. It's really important to just kind of put all this stuff in context and bring the details out. We have, if you're going to go after Sunnis like ISIL, you pretty much have to do it not with other Sunnis, because what's happening is that the so-called moderate Sunnis, you know, they're saying to the, quote, radical Sunnis, they're saying to ISIS, you know, please don't pick on us. Please don't fight with us. You almost have to side with the Shia, which is Iran and Syria, or at least the government, the Assad government. And now you're in the middle of a 700-year-old war. I mean, this is nuts. By the way, I mentioned our new book, Dan Sisson's new book that I helped edit, and I wrote a foreword for and afterward for and a few little pieces here and there. It's called The American Revolution of 1800. If you're in Washington, D.C., Sunday, September 21st, which, let's see, is that this? It's this coming Sunday, right? Yeah. So if you're going to be in Washington, D.C. this coming Sunday, we're going to have a gig at Busboys and Poets at the 5th and K Street location at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday. So there's a link on our website at tomhartman.com for more information about that. So, Richard in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Richard. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I thought you might be interested in a similar motel incident.
Uh-oh.
It's happened a couple of times, just once to me and once to my foreman on a business trip. I was at a small strip motel, you know, the kind with the outside.
Right.
Separated office that closes at night, and I walked outside. It was in the middle of winter, and I don't sleep in my underwear, and I couldn't get into my car. And I
you were outside nude in the winter?
Yeah.
Oh man, you beat me.
It was on a fairly major highway, but it was very early in the morning, so there was not a lot of traffic. But it took me about 20 minutes of banging on the door for the guy to even come and give me the key, and so.
Yeah, okay, you win. You win the award. I don't have a prize for you, but you win. That's an awful one. Oh, Richard. Didn't the cold air give you a clue? I mean, it was like, for me, it would have been the light in the hall, you know, but I was squinting my eyes to try to keep from waking up.
I travel a lot. I was just disoriented, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was the click of the door that turned me around, not the cold. But
yeah. Yeah, it was when that door closed behind me, because it's on some kind of a spring. It really closed fast. And
you can hear it just lock you out.
Yeah. It's a horrible, horrible sound. Richard, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to WNYY. Appreciate it. Shirley, it's good to know I'm not alone in this. Shirley in Wheeling, West Virginia, you wanted to talk about the Saudis and ISIS?
Yeah, I think it's outrageous that they're announcing we're going to send $300 million to them, who are the richest people in probably the world. So I actually know people from there, and they said every person, woman and child, is millionaires because of all the oil. But we're going to take our money and send it over when this country is falling apart. And I also think that as soon as you say the word war, do you notice the Republicans get their ears like a pack of dogs, and they're freaking out to rush over there and do it. And it also, I think, they're also trying to change the subject. They don't want to talk about Ferguson. They don't want to talk about the minimum wage. They don't want to talk about anything but the war now. It's on every channel. That's all you're going to hear, and it pushes all our real issues to the back burner.
Yeah,
that's
excellent.
All I have to say about it.
Well, you said it very well. Excellent point, Shirley. Thank you. I agree with you on every single point. Very well said. Marcia, in Anger, North Carolina, you have a white privilege story?
Hi. Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you just fine, Marcia.
Okay, great. So sometimes it is so easy to get through to you, and then sometimes it's impossible. I've been trying to tell you the silly white privilege story. I mean, it's kind of an upbeat one, considering all what we've been through and all the discussion you've had on it. It's been really down. But so last week, Clay Aiken had a fundraiser, and he's running for the representative in my district. I have Renee Elmers right now. It's District 2, North Carolina. So we go to the fundraiser, my friend and I, and while part of his speech, he talks about having taken a privilege exercise. And he talked about how they all lined up in a row, and then the person would ask them, if you're white, take a step forward. If you're not white, take a step back. If you're male, take a step forward. If you're not male, take a step back. And they went on and they asked more questions like that, even things like he mentioned, if you brought your lunch to school, you know, take a step forward. If you bought your lunch at school, take two steps forward. If you had reduced lunch, take a step back. And so by the end of the exercise, people were scattered all over the room,
mm-hmm.
and you got a chance to actually see how different things affected people. And I just thought that was awesome that he would even, you know, involve himself in that, because that's basically what it's going to take,
yeah.
is to actually push yourself to see, you
yeah.
know, where you stand, how you feel about things, how you recognize when privilege is there.
Yeah, that's excellent. And this was a guy running for Congress who did this?
Yeah, Clay Aiken, he came in second actually on American Idol.
Yeah.
Way back, at least 10 years ago.
Huh.
Season what? My friend is in the back.
Yeah.
Season two.
There you go. Okay, Marcia, thanks for sharing that story with us. That's a great one. It's a nice way to start the week. It's a whole lot better than being locked out of a hotel room. Thanks, Marcia. Appreciate the call. Dwayne in Williston, North Dakota. Hey, Wayne. Dwayne, excuse me. What's on your mind? You wanted to talk about the Democrats and Lindsey Graham?
Oh, yes, sir. I think a good answer. We've got to get better at this counter-moving, our chess moves with these people, these Republicans and these neophytes. Good God. If they want to go to war so daggum bad, and since there is no money left in the middle class due to the charts that you've seen, and we know the poor don't have anything, then why don't they approve ahead of time a tax increase on the wealthy to make sure that we have the money for the war?
Yeah.
Unlike the Iraq war, where there was so much damage done. You know, or they can pass some more laws to increase wages on the middle class so that our taxes can afford the war. Or better yet, why don't we just pass a Patriot Deportation Act that says that any company that outsources more than 30% of its workforce, the CEOs, the bean counters, and everybody that was involved in making that decision have to take them and their families' asses over to the country where they outsource the jobs to.
Right. And they have to spend at least 6 months of the year there, which is the standard residency requirement for taxes. I'm with you on all points, Dwayne. That's a great perspective. Thank you for sharing that. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, you wanted to talk about Steve Sotloff?
Yeah, Stephen Sotloff, according to what I had heard from Amy Goodman, apparently his family said that he was sold by the so-called moderates in Syria to ISIS. And I wanted to say that, you know, European governments, and I don't know that I would necessarily agree with this, but they do pay the ransoms. But I know that James Foley's family wanted to, raise the money to ransom him, and you cannot do that. It's just out and out illegal. I don't know if you yourself would get arrested if you tried.
Yeah, it's a violation of federal law. It's considered giving aid to terrorist groups.
And, you know, I just find that, you know, astounding. And, you know, my final comment is, you know, I absolutely agree with you as far as this nation-building idea in the Middle East. It's like, well, how stupid? I mean, how many times do we have to get burned? And, you know, I agree with Obama to, you know, really try to move, you know, cautiously, because in Syria you have a situation, according to I guess it's the Syrian Orthodox Church here, that bishop or archbishop of the Syrian Orthodox Church said, well, that would be an absolute death knell. If Assad fell, they would slaughter every Christian that you could think of in Syria. And so I hope that people realize that, you know, and not just the Christians, but it would also be Assad's own group.
Right, the Alawites.
People, among others.
Yeah, they go after the Christians, they go after the Jews, they go after the Alawites, the Sunni minorities.
Anybody that is not them. I don't really think that there is moderate, like, you know, people who believe in democracy. I don't think so. And so, you know, this whole situation, these war hawks, I'd like to personally, my emotional reaction is I'd like to throttle them. I really would.
Well, maybe maybe our government should create a special army battalion that's made up of nothing but, you know, guys over 40 who are,
in various political offices.
Maybe
we should send Dick Cheney. I'd love to send him.
Send Dick Cheney and Lindsey Graham. Let them go.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And John McCain, too. I mean, John McCain's never seen combat up close. He was a prisoner of war, but mostly what he did was drop bombs out of the sky. And, so if he's so in love with combat, let him go over and fight.
Fear really works on my fellow Americans. It doesn't work on me. I refuse to live in fear, and I refuse to react on the basis of fear.
Amen. We are supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. I mean, that's right there in the song that we sing. You know, it's and our national anthem, and it's. And where has that gone? It's certainly not there with Lindsey Graham. Thanks,
You're
John.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Maybe Lindsey Graham wants to rewrite the national anthem. You know, the land of the observed and the home of the kind of knock-kneed. I don't know. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 15 minutes before the hour. And Shana was just pointing out Lindsey Graham is still in the military. He's a JAG officer. And so we wouldn't even have to find a special battalion for him. Just, hey, Lindsey, off you go. I don't. Do you know which branch he's in? He's a judge. I don't know. I don't know which one it is, either. Marilyn in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Marilyn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's such an honor to talk to you. Yes, that's exactly what the previous guy just said. Absolutely nailed it. And there is a real threat against the world, against the people of the world, and that is Ebola. And it is spreading exponentially. And the United States is dead in the water as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And not to mention climate change. And they're squandering every penny we've got on a mess that they created, a mess they made themselves. And they're giving us the bill for it. That's just not what we voted for.
No. And to his credit, President Obama has been winding down these wars and has been trying to back us out of this area. But George W. Bush broke the Middle East so badly that it's like, what do you do? And, you know, I mean, my own hypothesis is that we really should have been more aggressively supporting civil society and schools for girls and infrastructure and, you know, helping to rebuild Iraq that we destroyed rather than funneling money into weaponry. But they elected a group of people who's not, you know, who's not all up for that. Go ahead.
The first victim of war is the truth.
Yeah.
And this war has been one big lie after another, after another, after another.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all goes back to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Don Rumsfeld responding to 9/11 in a way that was wrong. You know, we were not attacked by another country, or if we were, arguably it was Saudi Arabia, but we chose not to go to war with Saudi Arabia. We were not attacked by another country. We were attacked by a criminal gang, and the way that you deal with criminal gangs is with police, not armies. And
I love the truth. That's why I listen to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But I mean, this is kind of, you know, this is straightforward stuff. Marilyn, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. We have a little less than a minute. I'll pick up the next call right after the break. But let me just, you know, we need to be clear about this. Most Americans do not know that after immediate in the week after 9/11, the Taliban, which ran the government of Afghanistan, so the official government of Afghanistan, offered to arrest Osama bin Laden and send him to a neutral third country where he could be tried for 9/11. Everybody all around the world was horrified by 9/11, or pretty much everybody. And Afghanistan said, do you want us to arrest him? And George W. Bush said no. And we had a pretty good relationship with Afghanistan at that point. Bush had just sent them either $20 or $40 million to burn the opium poppies. And that year, 2001, the price of heroin really went up, and heroin abuse went down. HIV infections went down. Now they're back up again. Why? Because they're growing heroin like crazy, or opium poppies anyway, the precursor for heroin, like crazy in Afghanistan again. And you get bumper crops of the stuff, and it's killing Americans. It's like the war comes home. All these secondary things. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And do we have our guest? We're working on it. In that case, let me, because I understand our phone system is crashing, but let me just see what happens. Ken in Ticonderoga, New York. Hey, Ken. Can you hear me? No, Ken can't hear me. So okay, we're trying the old software. Let me close out of this software then and open the old software, the Telos Connect. So, yeah here we go. So anyhow, you're going to have to tell me which line, because there's no data in this. But, you know, my take on this 9/11 thing is very, very simple and very straightforward. This is a regional conflict. If we want to support somebody in that region, you know, we have the mechanism to do that. There's a whole variety of mechanisms to do that. But there's more than enough weapons in that area. Okay. And Andrea Garbarini. Andrea, yes. DeGeorge Garbarini is on, the filmmaker and 9/11 survivor, the widow of firefighter Lieutenant Charles Garbarini, one of 343 firefighters killed on 9/11. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And I understand that there's a new movie coming out, From the Ground Up thefilm.com is the website. Tell us about that.
Well, after 9/11, there was obviously a lot of trying to put the pieces back together. And I became inspired by one of the other widows in our 9/11 community. She had two autistic children and lost her husband. He was one of the battalion chiefs. And she decided to open up homes for autistic children to help other kids in the same situation, because her and her husband had discussed before his death that what would they do if they had won some money or won the lottery? What would they do to help others? And she honored his wishes by doing this. I mean, this woman could have just crawled into a corner and, you know, did nothing. But she was one of my heroes after 9/11. She's an amazing inspiration. And there were many other stories. So I explore about three other widows in the film and honor people that, in the face of adversity, do something to make a difference.
Yeah, and this is going to be airing tonight on Free Speech TV at 9:30 p.m., which is available on Dish Network, DirecTV, and a lot of cable systems all around the country.
Yes, it is.
So, what is the status these days? I mean, you know, there was a fair amount of attention paid early on to taking care of the needs of the first responders and the firefighters and whatnot, and then that kind of fell off the screen, the radar screen. For a number of years, legislation to help people who had survived 9/11 but had tried to help out. One of the guys that we had on fairly regularly just recently died of cancer from you know, his exposure there. What's the status of all that?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm completely up on all of the legislation and what's going on with them, but I know that they were able to apply for some victims' compensation, and they were able to get some funding for the people that really needed it. I mean, you know, it's like a drop of water hitting a stream, you know, hitting a pool of water. There's a ripple effect from 9/11, and it continues. you know, it continues with, I'm more in contact with the families that are, you know, the surviving, say the families that have had spouses that had died. And then, you know, in our community, you know, we're very supportive of helping all those that are still victims of 9/11. There's a lot. Tuesday's Children is a big organization within the 9/11 community that tries to help the children that are, you know, that have survived and the children that are left. They help the families. There's a lot of support out there. And, you know, it's bittersweet because here you had this tragedy, but I had 343 other fire department families to mourn with, including, you know, police and including, you know, civilians. So it was a very bittersweet tragedy here. You know, you weren't alone,
yeah,
is what I'm trying to say. And it, you know, I just am, enamored at some of the families, and like the Siller family, the Stephen Siller run, which is, I think, the last week in September, we've run that. They build homes for wounded warriors. My friend Una, who's in the movie, built a library in her town, you know.
Wow.
I mean, there's just, hey, you know, when you're handed lemons, try to make some lemonade out of it. Try to do something positive for your fellow human being. And that's what my movie's about.
Yeah. So you produced this movie yourself?
I produced it. My friends Beth and George Gage are the filmmakers. I was friends with them for years. They've done many documentaries that are really about meaningful situations, and I kind of talked them into it. I wore them down. I said, you know, I really want to tell the stories of the positive that came out of the negative. And I you know, gathered the people that I thought would be good in the film, and the monies that come in, I try to give back to the charities that were started by the families.
That is great. The movie is From the Ground Up. The website is fromthegroundup-thefilm.com. It's airing tonight at 9:30 p.m. on Free Speech TV, which is and people, if you don't have Free Speech TV on your television set, you can watch it on the web by going to freespeech.org. What am I missing, Andrea?
I don't think you're missing anything. I just hope that we can all find some peace in this world because, you know, it's an unfortunate time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just hope for that one.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And do you know if any of the 9/11 survivor groups have all of them stayed fairly nonpartisan or transpartisan as opposed to becoming very partisan?
With you mean as in the political world or there are, I'm sure there's groups out there that are, you know, very strong one way or the other. I mean, I think things like Tuesday's Children and things like that stay pretty neutral because we just, you know, they have an incredible camp for children. It's called Project Common Bond, where kids from all, this is an amazing story, kids from all around the world that are victims of terrorism come together, including my son, who's joined it 2 summers in a row, and they come together trying to find solutions
amazing
to problems.
That's wonderful. The movie is From the Ground Up. The website, fromthegroundup-thefilm.com. You can see it tonight, 9:30 on Free Speech TV. Andrea, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's great talking with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And a county in Pennsylvania, western Pennsylvania, they voted 8-6 against posting In God We Trust in their courthouse. They said that there is a movement by the right-wing evangelical Christians across the country to basically impose Christianity. Interesting. Brian Fisher is on the line with us, the host of the Focal Point radio show on AFR Talk, director of issues analysis for government and public policy at the American Family Association, AFA.net. And, Brian, welcome back to the program, first off.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. I am guessing, you know, as someone who is a fan of religion, that you would be a little concerned about government starting to endorse a particular God. I mean, this doesn't say in gods we trust. It doesn't say in Christianity we trust. Aren't you a little concerned that Buddhists and Hindus and whatnot are gonna say, yeah, cool?
Well, absolutely not. There's no concern here whatsoever, Tom. I'm a fan of American history. I'm a fan of the values of the Founding Fathers. I'm a fan.
Brian, this has nothing to do with the Founding Fathers. We put this In God We Trust. It became our national motto in 1956. In 54, we put Under God into our Pledge of Allegiance. Neither one had been in either place before. This was all about godless communism. Godless communism is dead outside of China, and we're giving them all our money.
Well, it's no surprise that the ones who voted against the motto in Allegheny County were Democrats. The Democrats voted God out of their platform, out of the building, and out of their party at the Democratic National Convention. So no surprise there.
So if you're all in favor of God, the merger of religion and government, would you be opposed to the Church of Satan having a monument out, you know, in this courthouse?
Well, absolutely, I'd be opposed to that. And the people of Allegheny County, they have the opportunity, they should have the freedom to decide to do whatever they want to do. Where people go wrong is if they think there's something unconstitutional or un-American about the decision that they've made.
Why would you be opposed to, maybe the Church of Satan is a little too inflammatory, but it seems like it's all the same thing. Would you be opposed to, you know, a Star of David?
Well, again, we go back to the values of the Founding Fathers and what they were enshrining in the First Amendment. They were protecting specifically the
free exercise. There were Jews among the Founding Fathers.
They were protecting the free exercise of the Christian religion in the First Amendment.
Oh, come on. That's nonsense, Brian, and you know it. Half those guys weren't even Christians.
And they were leaving to the states the freedom to do whatever else they wanted to do with regard to religious expression. So if the state of Oklahoma wants to acknowledge the Church of Satan, they can do it. If they don't want to, they don't have to. That's freedom, Tom.
No, that's the merger of government and religion, and that's something that the founders would have been horrified by, Brian, and I would think that you would be too, because the day may come when your religion is not the majority religion anymore, and you're going to have some other religion, you know, merging with our government, and that's what was so horrified the founders, that they put it twice in the Constitution, you know, no establishment of religion and no religious tests.
Well, what the establishment of religion means is to pick one Christian denomination and make it the official church of the United States. As long as Congress doesn't do that, they can do anything they want.
Or a Muslim religion, or a Jewish religion, or a Hindu or Buddhist religion?
Well, again, Tom, you're showing your ignorance of constitutional history. If you go back and read Joseph Story, the first historian, longest-serving associate justice on the United States Supreme Court, he said the purpose of the First Amendment was to exclude rivalry among the Christian denominations. They weren't even dealing with Islam or Buddhism or Judaism or even atheism.
Well, there was a big battle going on back then. Jefferson talked about it in his letter to Ben Rush 3 months before he was elected president in 1800, in which he said that the coming election gives, particularly to the Presbyterians and the Congregationalists, the hope that I may identify one of them as the favored religion. He said, but their hopes are to be dashed because I have sworn upon the altar of God my eternal enmity or opposition to any form of tyranny over the minds of man. And I mean, you know, he was talking about priests. He was talking about religion. He said, he has sworn before God to oppose religion in government.
Right. And the First Amendment prohibits the establishment of any one Christian. Thomas Jefferson, exactly right. Congress, and by the way, Congress is not Allegheny County. Allegheny County can do whatever they want. First Amendment restricts Congress, and it prohibits them from picking one Christian denomination and making.
No, I get
it
that. Why there's this is sort of like the Reagan, you know, the Reinvent Reagan project. What's it called? The Reagan Legacy Project, where it's some rich guys funded this thing back about 20 years ago, and they're trying to build a monument or name a building after Ronald Reagan in every single county in the United States and every single country around the world, and they're damn near there. And, you know, this is the same thing. There's who is behind this, let's put In God We Trust in every public building? Who's doing that?
Well, President Truman, who is a Democrat, said in 1949, when the U.S. was established, the motto was In God We Trust. That's still our motto. We still place our firm trust in God. If it was good enough for President Truman, good enough for Allegheny County.
Well, A, Truman was wrong, and B, you didn't answer my question. Who is responsible, who is behind this effort to put In God We Trust in all our public buildings?
President Kennedy said in 1960.
Now, who is behind this modern day movement to put In God We Trust in all our public buildings? Who's doing that?
President John Kennedy said in 1961, Tom, the guiding principle of this nation has been, is now, and ever shall be, In God We Trust. If it's good enough for JFK, it's good enough for Allegheny.
Who is behind this movement to put these signs up in these public buildings, Brian? Do you know?
I have no idea.
You don't know. Okay.
No,
right.
I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, you know, you've got Judge Moore down in Alabama who wanted to put the Ten Commandments out there.
Tom, in 2003, CNN conducted a poll. 90% of Americans support In God We Trust on coins. Good enough for 90% of the American people. Ought to be good enough for Allegheny County.
What percentage of the American people supported slavery in 1650?
On November 1st, 2011, Tom, the House of Representatives passed by a 396-9 vote a resolution reaffirming In God We Trust as the official motto of the U.S. Good enough for the House of Representatives. It ought to be good enough for Allegheny County.
And what was the vote for ratifying slavery as part of our Constitution in 1789?
You know, what a lot of people don't know, Tom, is that In God...
Yeah, Brian, just because the majority of people like something doesn't make it right.
But what a lot of people don't know is that the phrase In God We Trust actually comes from the national anthem, from the Star Spangled Banner. That goes back to 1814.
Yeah. Which was not during the founding of this republic. Brian, I beg your pardon, Shay? Oh, yeah, it wasn't the national anthem until the 1930s, by the way.
The song was written, and the founders loved it.
Brian, I don't understand. You know, if you really believe that your religion is right and you really believe that your religion is true, why do you feel the need to shove it down everybody's throat by slapping it up on public buildings?
Tom, nobody.
It sounds to me like you're very insecure about your religion.
Nobody is forcing it down anybody's throat. Nobody has to believe it. Nobody.
If I have to show up in a county courthouse because I got to pay a traffic ticket or something, and there it is in my face from my government, you tell me that's not being forced on me?
Absolutely not. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to read it. You don't have to acknowledge it. You don't even have to believe it.
Why don't we just put signs over all of them and say "Arbeit macht frei"? You know, work makes freedom. Well, it was good enough for the death camps.
The Supreme Court ruled in the Greece prayer case last year that in order for there to be a violation of the Constitution, there must be some sort of coercion. They said very clearly, being offended is not a constitutional violation.
Yeah, I get that. I just it just seems to me, Brian, that you are shooting yourself in the foot. But, you know, apparently you don't think so. AFA.net is the website. Brian Fisher. Thanks, Brian.
All right, Tom, you're welcome.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So should we be putting more of God in our public? Or which God? The gods? How do we do this? And welcome back. Rick in Las Vegas, Nevada, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
When you said that Lindsey Graham piece earlier, and he was ranting about going to war, but if you remember not too long ago he and John McCain convinced the Saudis to support ISIS.
Right.
And now he wants to go to war with ISIS.
Right.
I just thought that was a conflict of interest, or maybe actually not so much, because that seems like what they...
What I find so insane is that every time Lindsey Graham and John McCain are interviewed on television, they're not identified by the reporters who are interviewing them as the guys who helped raise the money to fund ISIS.
Oh.
I mean, you know, our news reporters should at the very least say, well, and here to weigh in on this issue is the guy who went to Prince Bandar and got the original funding for ISIS when it was the opposition to the Bashar al-Assad government in Syria. Lindsey Graham, you know, here he is, the guy who helped fund ISIS. Mr. Graham, now, how is your little invention doing now? Yeah. You know, I mean, come
That's
on.
The irony of it.
Yeah, well, it's not just ironic. It's the obscenity of it. I mean, it goes beyond just irony. This is just terrible. Anyway, thank you, Rick. Thanks for the call. Well said. Lynn in Welaka, Florida, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Yes, I have an idea, and my idea stems from the fact that I think our government is hopelessly dysfunctional and corrupt, and I think that we have to educate people as to proper civics and proper government, and that is not going to come from the people that write the textbooks who have political agendas, and that's not going to come from the networks. It is going to come from no dog in the hunt journalists who know how to do journalism impartially, facts only, and deliver it to the kids that are doing homeschooling, which are increasing exponentially. Kids are being homeschooled, and provide a curriculum written by people who do not have a dog in the hunt.
Okay. I mean, there's some great homeschool curriculum out there. Our youngest daughter homeschooled. And she did it through an online school.
A lot of the curriculum are run by Republicans, and the schools are being run by for-profit organizations
right.
who have their own agenda. My idea is to have a civics and government program, current events, if you would, that is outside of that venue, because I don't think you're going to get it within a government venue, the kind of objectivity that you only find, frankly, on Free Speech TV and a few of the others, and you're not going to be finding it in the government-funded Republican ideology curriculums that you see out there.
Yeah, well, you see, you know, textbooks, as a result of Texas being the largest purchaser of textbooks where they've, you know, from a single body, the Texas Board of Education, now they've decided to take out numerous references to Thomas Jefferson and replace them with references to Rush Limbaugh and Michelle Bachmann. I'm not kidding. I'm not making that up. And, you know, this is pretty serious stuff. On the other hand, you know, we did a pretty good job of teaching civics back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. It's like there was a time when we knew how to do this. I'm with you, Lynn. We need to be teaching civics, and we need to be doing it better. Thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. 20 minutes past. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Talk media for the rest of us. Helen in Las Vegas, New Mexico. Las Vegas, New Mexico? Really?
No, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, Nevada. Okay. We've got the initials wrong.
I'm on my cell phone, and something happened to my land phone, so I hope you can hear me.
Hey, you sound
what I wonder about is why something can't be done, because we're supposed to have a citizen representative government, and instead we have this partisan government with one representative, John Boehner from Cincinnati, setting the agenda for all of us. He one representative, and then we have next door in that Cincinnati area, Mitch McConnell. Doing everything he can to nullify what Reid wants to do in the Senate. This is excess power for partisan politics and nullifying my vote, basically.
Yeah, I don't disagree. What it's going to take is a high level of citizen activism You know, we need to get involved. We need to be showing up. We need to be participating.
That ain't going to happen.
Why not?
It seems to me, in a country of lawyers, we should be able to do something.
Yeah, you would think. I personally believe that it's going to take a crisis, a really significant crisis of some kind, for us to roll back Reaganomics, to undo the damage that the right wing has done to this country over the last 35 years, and probably an economic crash. You know, God forbid it would be something like Ebola coming here or whatever. But I you know, Americans, you know, outside of, you know, everybody's watching TV and celebrity chef shows, football and celebrity chef shows. Nobody is seriously, you know, paying attention to politics. I saw a poll over the weekend that showed that half of Americans don't even know that there's an election coming up this November. And, you know, that's pretty scary.
However, you have block vote and citizen nullification.
Yeah, there you go. Ellen, thank you for the call. Well, well said. Billy in Wimberley, Texas, you like In God We Trust in our federal buildings?
Well, with regards to In God We Trust on the coinage, I wonder why saying In God We Trust does not endorse any particular religion. Why is that? Why does that seem to be a problem for you people?
Because it endorses religion, period.
It says God. It endorses God.
Right. If we put on our coins, if we put on our coins in Smith and Wesson, I trust, wouldn't we be supporting Smith and Wesson?
That's a false comparison.
No, it's not.
In God We Trust acknowledges God. Even the liberals acknowledge God.
I have seen bumper stickers that say it's Smith and Wesson, I trust. You know.
Well, I mean, it's still a stupid comparison for your purpose.
No, it's not. It's if you've got a slogan that is endorsing one particular point of view, which is that there is a single God out there who is like the God. There is a God, and only one God. That is a specific point of view that may or may not be shared even by a majority of the human race.
That is your interpretation of that.
Yeah. Well, apparently you have no understanding of, for example, Hinduism. You got all kinds of gods in Hinduism.
Well, I believe I'm a monotheist believer.
Right. In God We Trust is a monotheistic statement. And so it basically what it says is Hindus not welcome here, or atheists not welcome here. And how can that be a good and inclusive thing?
You're lying.
Why not say in democracy we trust?
Do you believe in God, Tom?
That has nothing to do with it, Billy.
The question
is whether our government should be endorsing monotheism.
You know, this country has gotten much, much better since you people started removing God from every part of our lives. It's gotten better, hasn't it?
Life is longer now. Crime is down now. Yeah, it appears to be.
Morality is at an all-time low. People are
actually
wives. I mean, they've always done that.
Marriages are lasting longer than they used to. You know,
God We Trust does not endorse any particular religion. To say that it does,
it endorses all the monotheistic religions, and it disses all the polytheistic religions, and it disses all the atheists, Billy. In God We Trust is not something that a Hindu would agree with. It's not something that a Buddhist would agree with. It's not something that a pantheist would agree with. It's not something that an atheist would agree with. And
what you people fail to understand is you can
you
lie
people?
As much as you want. It's not going to change what the truth is.
So you know revealed truth. When did God tell you this, Billy?
I know there is one God.
How do you know?
I believe in God.
How do you know?
Father of the Almighty, maker
How do you know?
Of heaven and earth.
How do you know?
How do I know?
Yeah.
My faith informs me of that.
Okay, so you don't know, you believe.
I know.
Okay, so how do you know?
Like I said, my faith informs me of that.
Okay, so you believe.
I believe that. That's correct.
Okay, all right, just so we're clear. Thanks a lot, Billy. Rudy in Riverside, Illinois. Hey Rudy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Lindsey Graham and his Republican Party are using a ploy. You know, this hysteria of his is trying to push the president to go to war,
right,
especially so close to an election.
Yep.
I mean, this is what they've been, and they got help. They got help from their friends in the Middle East. Lindsey Graham said, remember what you said, thank God
for the Saudis.
Bandar?
Yeah, thank God for the Saudis was the phrase, and it was John McCain said it.
So this is, I hope, you know, I'm calling the president on his line, and I'm going to try and remind him of what I just told you. And I hope he takes note of it and resists it, because the American people are so against war, this will really foul up the Democrats in November.
Well, and President Obama used to be against this kind of position. I mean, he gave a speech about a year ago where he, you know, basically said that, you know, we don't want to be on a permanent war footing. War expands the power of the White House, of the president. We need to diminish that. We shouldn't ought to be doing that. You got that clip, Shannon?
In the years to come, not every collection of thugs that labels themselves Al-Qaeda will pose a credible threat to the United States. Unless we discipline our thinking, our definitions, our actions, we may be drawn into more wars we don't need to fight, or continue to grant presidents unbound powers more suited for traditional armed conflicts between nation states. So I look forward to engaging Congress and the American people in efforts to refine and ultimately repeal.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
He wants to repeal the AUMF. That's the authorization he has forced. That is what, you know, that's actually what he's using right now in Syria. That was a year ago, he said. 28 minutes before the hour, the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Donald in Chicago. Hey, Donald, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. You know, what I can't understand about all these so-called religious fanatics that call up, because that's what they are, it seems like I never remember anybody talking about God so much ever since we got a black president. I'm starting to wonder if the word God is usually being used as a code word for white, because even growing up as a kid, learning about government, there was always the separation between church and state. Right. Am I not right?
You're right, but I have to, you know, push back a little bit. These religious debates have been going on throughout my lifetime. I mean, you know, and it was in the 50s and 54 and 56 that you know, under One Nation Under God got in 1954 got put into the Pledge of Allegiance, and in 1956 In God We Trust was adopted as the nation's motto. It was our very first motto. It was, you know, it was a resolution of Congress. And, you know, these were responses to the Cold War. They were responses to communism, which was explicitly and overtly atheist. But, you know, God has been used by, you know, George Washington invoked God in one of his speeches. And to this day, the David Bartons and historians of the world try to point to that as proof of his Christianity, although George Washington refused to ever publicly say that he was a Christian. Jefferson wasn't. He was a deist. He took the first four books of the New Testament, the Gospels, and cut out with a razor blade all of Jesus' miracles. That book is still in print. It's called the Jefferson Bible, you know, 200 and some odd years later. The founders of this country were not, you know, Bible-thumping, monotheistic Christians. Some of them were. Patrick Henry was. He was also the largest slave owner in the state of Virginia. And he was the one who argued that the Second Amendment had to say free state, not free nation, so that they could maintain their slave patrols. I mean, you know, if that's the kind of Christianity you want, it's good luck with that. But I don't think that this, I mean, there's a lot of things we can point to where the right has tried to paint Obama as the other. And arguably religion could be one of them. His association with Reverend Wright, for example, an African-American pastor, you know, who has said some things that when taken out of context sound inflammatory. But I don't think this is so much about race. I think this is genuinely about a religion. And Donald, thank you for the call. And I just have to say, my experience, the experience of my lifetime has informed me, and I really believe this to be true, that the less certain somebody is of something, the more they're having an internal struggle with it, whether or not it's real or not, the more evangelical they get about it. In other words, somebody who's really not certain about whether God is God or God is real or Jesus is a savior or fill in the blank, right? That's going to be the person who most aggressively is out there proselytizing. And the reason why is because every time they change somebody else's mind, every time they can get somebody on their side, every time they convince somebody, it helps them believe that, oh, I must be right, because that person has now validated my belief. They're seeking external validation. And I don't think our government should be in that business, frankly. Or if we are going to seek external validation for something that we don't really have, but we hold, you know, we say we hold dear, let's make it democracy, small d democracy. In democracy, we trust. In the people, we trust. I go for those. even though, you know, we're increasingly becoming an oligarchy. So, Ann in Pomona Beach, Florida, or Park, Florida, excuse me. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. I know you might be tired of talking about the religious debate, but I just have to throw my 2 cents worth in here at the risk of offending the Christian body, because I don't believe that God wants to be in our courtrooms. They're not godly. They're so corrupt these days, it's ridiculous. God never said put my name on the money, which is also dirty and corrupt, and usually, you know, won by blood.
In fact, Jesus said the opposite. If the centurion came to him and you know, said, should I pay my taxes? And Jesus said, whose picture's on the coin? And he said, Caesar. And Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and unto God what is God's. You know, if anything, it was a statement about the separation of church and state.
Right, because they serve God and money. And I think these poor, misguided Christians who think that this is somehow witnessing to people by stamping it on the courtroom are so far off. Nobody's being saved by reading in God We Trust when we walk in the courtroom. Right. You know, they're worried about themselves. I think this is just such a big waste of time. If they want to share their faith, and I don't even like the word religion, but if they want to share their faith, you are supposed to do that one-on-one in a very personal, non-judgmental way, not stamp it here and stamp it there and forbid people to take it down. I mean, that's not written in the book I read, or I don't think anybody else's, but they've gotten on this bandwagon, like, you're right, shove it down their throat.
Well, and the guys who are really serious about, you know, our religion is, you know, is our government and it informs everything we do, that's ISIS. Right? Beheading people in the name of God. Saudi Arabia beheaded almost 30 people last month, and about a third of them were beheaded for things like witchcraft. I mean, is that...
So with all due respect, you know, I understand your conversation with your Brian caller there was a very one-sided call, but it doesn't really even matter what our forefathers believed in, what kind of religion they were, because faith is very personal, and really just stamping it on everything isn't changing anybody's faith. That's all I wanted to say.
I'm with you. Well said, Ann. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Horatio, or is it Horacio in San Diego, California?
Yes, good morning. How you doing? Yeah, I was calling for Billy, or what was his name? That was white privilege right there.
How so?
You know what? Guy was all over the South, and how did that work for the black people down there?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like, the Bible Belt is in the South, right?
Well, sort of, yeah.
They're black people real bad. I mean, they burn their churches, they bomb places, they kill people, they hang people, and God was all over the place. That's when he was talking about morality. How does that work? What is he talking about?
Right. Well, and Christianity was imposed on slaves as a way of saying,
yes.
Well, you know, keep picking that cotton and someday you'll be in heaven and you'll be happy. And
yeah, they said that you can be free, but not in this lifetime. You can be free when you die.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they've done such a fine job for us all, haven't they, Horacio? Thank you very much for the call. Bob in Chicago. Hey, Bob. You wanted to talk about separation of church and state?
Yes. Thank you for everything you do, Tom. I agree with you 100% of the time.
Wow.
And I just got my copy of The Prophet's Way, and I'm thrilled finally to get to read it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And anyway, if I'll get to the point, I thought that Brian Fisher was especially smug, even for him. And it's very dismissive of the Establishment Clause. I don't believe that he has interpreted that correctly. But more importantly, I took great offense at him smiting you with the words of John F. Kennedy, as though John F. Kennedy would have supported In God We Trust on the in public display. I looked up one of his speeches that he gave September 12, 1960 to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association. And I don't want to read all of it, of course, but can I read you just a couple of brief little clips?
Sure.
So I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference, and where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president who might appoint him. I believe in America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source, where no religious body seeks to impose its will directly or indirectly upon the general populace for the public acts of its officials, and where religious liberty is so indivisible that an act against one church is treated as an act against all.
Yeah, and Kennedy was taking that position because his Catholicism was being used against him. And
right.
And he, if anything, he was bending over backwards to say, no, you know, I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am my own man, you know, and I'm not. Yeah. And he said things to that effect on a number of occasions. Excellent point, Bob. Thank you for that. Thanks for the call. Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening to KTRC.
I was listening to your other caller, and I couldn't help but think, does he realize that there is a goddess on top of the Capitol named Columbia?
Yeah, and in New York Harbor and in front of the Justice Department, one of her breasts got covered by John Ashcroft and his hysteria for 6 years during the Bush administration.
I one of the reasons I really like the idea of separation of church and state and agree with you has to do with some, I remember some stories from the last 10, 12 years about controversies at places like the Air Force Academy, where if you wanted to get ahead, you joined the colonel's Bible study group.
Yep.
And if you did not, you were an outsider and you shunned. And I believe that the separation of church and state should also be strictly enforced in our military, and that we should not be sending people over there who think that this is some sort of joyous crusade against the Muslim factor.
Yeah, and that scandal in the Air Force Academy that Mikey Weinstein wrote about, he wrote a book about it. He was a graduate of the Air Force Academy, and his son is attending the Air Force Academy, or was a few years ago. He was on this program, and he's Jewish. And his son was like, you know, I'm not gonna do this particular song and dance, and was, you know, severely, essentially punished for it, ostracized for it. And excellent point. Kevin, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And our new book is out. It'll be in bookstores shortly, but you can find it online. The Revolution of 1800. And welcome back. Norma, watching Free Speech TV in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Thanks, Dr. Tom. Every time I see this guy on TV, I can't remember his name, saying we have to protect ourselves from these people making these speeches, I think back to the first Gulf War. And we have since that time been taking legal immigrant refugees, and they come over here and they become supposedly American citizens. But they maintain dual citizenship, and we allow this. And I start thinking about Khrushchev and take over America without firing a shot, and sleeper cells. And if you want to be scared of something, why don't you think about all of these people, you know, like the kids that bombed Boston. And they're sitting here in the United States. And if you wanted to be scared to death of something, why don't you think about these people? Mm. And also, can you play that tape again of Rockefeller and his grid in Iraq and the oil? You know, this, we created a problem, and we shouldn't be acting like Richard the Lionhearted going back in there. Yeah. It's just, you know, the Crusades. It's just, this problem has been going on for centuries, and for us to go in there and try to take over again is ridiculous. And the Saudis have vested interest in having these wars. Mm. They don't no longer have any oil, so they need other people's oil, and they need other income. That's why they want to run the pipeline from UAE into Ukraine. Mm. And that's why they're taking over Nigeria's oil well. And that's dirty oil with arsenic in it.
Yeah. Apparently your knowledge of these things exceeds mine. I can't speak to how much oil the Saudis have left. I know in the late 80s, early 90s, they restated their reserves, up estimating them by about a third, apparently to be able to borrow against them from the World Bank.
Well, they've been pumping salt water down. They're trying to force the heavy crude up, and they've been building a an electrical grid, so a solar grid. Mm-hmm. They can sell electricity to Eastern Europe. But how do they get it there? It's the terrain. And running a natural gas pipeline from the huge natural gas field off of UAE into Eastern Europe has to follow the same route. And when you send in these people to create discord, it's like a distraction. What is going on in your right hand when your left hand is doing the evil things?
Right.
And going after, you know, buying a third of Ethiopia and running the people out so they could get to the water. Buying the land of Madagascar so they could get the dirt to run the electric grid. And if you pull this stuff up and you start looking at this long-range plan, and then you have all, like I said, all these people, these legal immigrants nobody talks about. We're supposed to be scared of the illegal immigrants. But nobody talks about these legal immigrants who come in here and they bring their culture. They do not assimilate and become what I call an American the way our ancestors did. And you look at what's going on in Detroit, is that going to be New Rydia? You know, people don't stop and think about the long-range plan and how long will it be. You know, how many times are we going to sit here and watch someone else buy America? And you're supposed to be afraid of what's going on over there when you're not thinking about what happens here?
Yeah, what concerns me, I'm not so concerned about the Boston bombing kind of thing. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff happens. It happens in countries all over the world. I am concerned about the fact that the United States increasingly is not the property of the United States. And you've got foreign corporations, you know, as major employers, and you've got U.S. corporations going overseas to avoid taxes. It's just all wrong. Norma, thank you for the call. Excellent. Welcome back. Let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And hey, Victoria, welcome.
Hey, Tom.
Nice to see you. What's going on in the world today?
Oh, a great deal is going on today. The French and the Iraqis have been hosting an international conference in Paris today of numerous countries, including the United States, which was represented by Secretary of State John Kerry, and 30 countries have pledged to help Iraq fight ISIS, quote, by all means necessary. They issued a joint statement by foreign ministers saying that support would include appropriate military assistance. The talks have been called to agree a strategy to combat the group. Communique that they issued following the meeting. Few specifics have been really presented so far. So the fact that they're saying support would include appropriate military assistance, that was a step forward. And Kerry has been drumming up support for a plan of action. Iraqi President Fouad Massoum, who co-hosted the conference, said if this intervention and support to Iraq is late, that means that Islamic State could occupy more territory and the threat it poses will be even bigger.
Mm.
Also, today, Iran has said, Ayatollah Khamenei says, Iran will not cooperate with efforts to combat ISIS because it fears the U.S. is, quote, planning a war to dominate the region. Said U.S. has corrupted his hands in this issue and that the regional offensive against ISIS was a bid by the U.S. to turn Iraq and Syria into a country like Pakistan where it can commit crimes wherever it wants.
Hmm.
It also said that it was turning down an offer from the U.S.
Wow.
So, but I was at the briefing with Josh Earnest a little earlier, who said that there may have been a couple of conversations, back-channel talks with Iran, but there had been no offer made to Iran.
Right. You know, Boko Haram is just as Salafi, I think is the word, fundamentalist, right-wing, neo-Wahhabist, Muslim, as is IS, as is ISIL, ISIS, whatever you want to call it. And it's larger. They've done more damage. They're kidnapping and raping women like there's no tomorrow. We're not going after them. Is that because they're in parts of Nigeria where there's basically no oil and the oil secure, you know, areas are locked down and secure? Or, I mean, why are we not hysterical about Boko Haram and we are about ISIS?
I don't know the answer to that, Tom.
Okay. All right.
Wait, I can't answer that.
Be a good question to ask Josh Earnest.
Would be an interesting question. The FBI has initiated a tool to identify and search for people's faces, it announced today. It's this facial recognition system, one of the new programs they're rolling out. It's part of the FBI's new Next Generation ID program, which it's hoping is going to replace the fingerprint system. They rely on mugshot photos to search for people and identify them by tattoos, scars, and other distinguishing features. And they're very excited about this, saying it's going to provide law enforcement community with an investigative tool that provides an image searching capability of photographs associated with criminal identities. It's been in the works for years at a reported cost of $1 billion. However, privacy and civil liberties organizations have worried about the government tracking people's faces. And the digital rights group Electronic Frontier Foundation previously warned that the FBI was planning to grow its database to 52 million pictures, many of them of people never arrested for a crime. FBI Director James Comey dismissed that claim this year, saying the FBI will use the database to see if we can find bad guys by matching pictures with mugshots.
Right. Okay. So he says we're not going to use civilian pictures?
Well, he said that they're going to use the database to see if we can find bad guys by matching pictures with mugshots. Right. I read a couple of articles earlier this year about this in some depth. There seem to be some real major concerns with it.
Yeah.
Josh Earnest was asked a question at the briefing about Scottish independence. As you know, the vote is coming up on Thursday. And the White House weighed in carefully, not quite as carefully as the Queen, who said that Scottish people should think very carefully, which is either a very careful statement or it's the equivalent of a horse's head on your pillow, depending how you weigh the British wonderful capacity for understatement.
Yes, yes. Well, I think, you know, Paul Krugman did a great piece on how Scotland will be committing political and economic suicide if they do this and they don't establish their own currency. They will become to the UK what Greece is to the EU. And because they don't have their own currency anymore, so they have no control over their economic destiny. Has there been any conversation among the Scots about establishing their own currency, or are they holding to this official position that they're going to use the pound?
There has been conversation about their own currency. I mean, there's been a lot of conversation back and forth, but I think they are being told that they can hang on to the pound. That is mostly the line that's being fed them, and I say fed them because I don't believe it's true.
Yeah, well, I don't believe it's in the best interest of Scotland. For that matter, I think if Greece went back to the drachma, Spain went back to the peso, they could solve their economic problems very, very quickly simply by devaluing their, you know, the traditional ways that countries do that, devalue your currency and move on. But now that they're stuck with the euro, they've got all these horrible problems. Germany makes a fortune, Greece gets screwed, and we'll see where this goes. I'm blithering. Back to you.
Former State Senator Russell Pierce, Republican, resigned his position as first vice chair of the Arizona Republican Party late last night after he said on a recent episode of his radio show, "You put me in charge of Medicaid, the first thing I do is get Norplant, birth control implants, or tubal ligations. Then we'll test recipients for drugs and alcohol, and if you want to reproduce or use drugs or alcohol, then get a job."
Demonizing poor people again.
Democrats and Republicans criticized him for that.
So good. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Always great talking to you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer.
maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and very pleased to have on the line with us Katrina Vandenhoevel, the publisher and editor of The Nation magazine, the website thenation.com. Her most recent piece is titled Time to End the Bloody Ukraine Conflict. Katrina, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always nice having you with us. I have a... just as a starting point into this topic, I have in my hands an article by Roman Olyaj, I can't pronounce it, in Kiev, and Jivan Bazgar in Berlin,
yes,
from the Financial Times. The headline is, Germany urges Ukraine to accept federal solution with separatists. Can you explain to our listeners and viewers what a federal solution is, why Germany is promoting this, and what this has to do with what's going on right now in Ukraine?
Let me just, if I could, step back, Tom,
sure,
because this weekend has been an interesting one in terms of the possibilities of a ceasefire holding, a ceasefire that was put in place September 5th, negotiated by envoys from Ukraine, Russia, the rebels, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And that has as its basis one of the points is this idea raised by the authors, one in Berlin, about autonomy or federalization. You know, there are other parts of this world where there are countries which have federalist more autonomy. There's been a misconception in this country that Russia wants Ukraine to be divided. All along, the Russian position has been, and the position of those in the southeastern part of Ukraine is not independence. It is autonomy. It is federalism. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people remember, but the rebel leaders in Donbass in June, I believe, were seeking greater local autonomy within Ukraine through a referendum on federalism.
Right.
So I think that's important. I also think it's important that you're hearing Germany speak out that way, because what we saw this weekend, Tom, were war parties on both sides, but the Ukrainian side is deeply divided, with the President Poroshenko continuing to insist that there is only a political solution to the crisis. Prime Minister Yatsenyuk, on the other hand, announced at a conference held in Kiev a few days ago that only Ukraine and NATO would be a possible resolution of the conflict. And meanwhile, what we're witnessing in the, particularly in a part of Ukraine called Mariupol, is you're witnessing the possibility of counterinsurgency guerrilla warfare emerging from paramilitaries' discontent, in fact, disgusted with the official Kiev Ukrainian army. And it's unclear who's in control. I mean, you have a president saying we need a political solution. You have a prime minister saying the only way forward is Ukraine and NATO, which all sides to the ceasefire a few days ago acknowledged was a red line. And then you have the beginning of these paramilitary units fighting the rebels in the southeast of Ukraine, and the Kiev army losing control. So it's a very dangerous situation, as anyone, you know, just listening to the basic outline of this might know, because, you know, the elements of the Kiev elite, who Yatsenyuk, the prime minister, represents, are basically saying, we are ready for a war between NATO/the U.S. and Russia. This is actual, not Cold War. And by the way, this is something Stephen Cohen, who has written for The Nation since the crisis began, who's written for many years, full disclosure, my husband, has been warning about and warning against since February, March of this year, the real danger that the new Cold War line is not down the middle of Berlin, but is now close on the borders of Russia, possibly into Ukraine.
Right. So, and just for definitions, a lot of people may not know what you mean when you say federalism. Can you define that term?
You know, protection for local election of mayors, for example.
Mm-hmm.
More autonomy in local elections. Respect for language. This has been a big problem. When the Maidan protests erupted, one of the first acts of the new Rada, or parliament, was to prohibit the use of Russian language in parts of Ukraine. That was quickly overturned, but it aroused so much resentment, so many grievances, that too, in a deeply divided, historically divided, dramatically divided Ukraine, has to be part of any kind of greater local autonomy, federalist structure.
Right.
So I think, again, but Tom, some of this, as you well know, because you've studied, I think, federalism in different countries over time, in different historical contexts.
Certainly.
The issue of autonomy and what that autonomy or federalism will look like is going to be part of any negotiation.
Right.
And the deeper we get into the splintering, the factionalization, the more difficult that kind of possibility is to arrive at. I would say we're seeing another division. You mentioned, very interesting, the role Germany, Angela Merkel of Germany has played. But NATO itself is divided in terms of approach to Ukraine. There is a story out this past weekend. Again, this is basically sourced to the Prime Minister, Yatsenyuk, that five NATO countries have promised to provide weapons to Ukraine. There are denials. And certainly Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Hungary have split with Poland in terms of a more robust, muscular, aggressive approach to support of Ukraine. And as you can hear in that story you began with, Germany all along has tried to find a political resolution and has at times, I think, divided off from the United States, where I think the neocons have basically been given control of the Ukraine policy.
Yeah. So, you know, the narrative that we here in the United States is that this is all, you know, crazy Vladimir Putin doing a land grab and trying to reconstruct the Soviet Empire, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any truth to that?
There is. Let's begin with the dominant narrative. And it's very important to do so, Tom, because media coverage, you know this well, media can often define the reality in which we operate because media privileges certain viewpoints. Media defines reality for people. Often it makes people spectators, not citizens. But there would have been no civil war in this historically deeply divided country if the European Union had not insisted, and this was last November, on an exclusive economic association agreement that deeply prejudiced Ukrainian industry in the East and trade with Russia, or if the United States and European nations had used their influence with the demonstrators to abide by a February 21st agreement that President Viktor Yanukovych, deeply corrupt, unliked, but he signed, it would have handed more power to Parliament and called for elections in December. This was an agreement that was tossed away because of the protests in the street. But it was an agreement that would have calmed worries in Crimea and the East about the rights, as I said earlier, of Russian-speaking Ukrainians. Instead, and here is where the narrative has never really, you don't hear this, the U.S. and the EU have encouraged the most radical elements in the Kiev government, which is what we're witnessing today. It is interesting that Poroshenko is emerging more, though he presided, and again, some think that he wasn't his own man, over this intense military campaign, this, quote, anti-terrorist operation. But there are many who think that the more these paramilitary forces, the more far-right ultranationalist forces, have really pushed him into this. But now we're seeing the most radical elements in the Kiev government saying we don't want a political solution.
Hmm.
And so our responsibility goes, you know, beyond the immediate crisis, Tom, as well. I mean, we spoke last week. There wouldn't have been such a kind of concerted Russian nationalist response, and there has been. And there's no question that Russia has contributed to tensions in the region. But if we hadn't been part of the expansion of NATO into Eastern Europe and now into the borders of Russia, a move that George Kennan, father of containment, eminent diplomat, thought was the most fateful error of the Cold War period, if we had not pushed that as hard, we would be in a different place today, because NATO essentially is at the heart.
Katrina, can you stick around?
Absolutely.
Okay, hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're talking with Katrina VandenHeuvel, the editor and publisher of The Nation, thenation.com. Her most recent piece, Time to End the Bloody Ukraine Conflict. Check it out. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back. Katrina, you still here with us?
I am. I just wondered if I could, Tom, you mentioned, you know, I think one of the key points, pillars of the narrative is also that Russia's annexation of Crimea,
mm-hmm.
which was a violation of the international order, and is, you know, we have seen other countries, including our own beloved country, violate international law, international order. But that was interpreted as a possible prelude to further territorial expansion. And I think that is where the narrative breaks down in fundamental ways. Crimea, as many of your listeners may know, was an exceptional circumstance. It was, first of all, part of Russia. Former Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev gave it as a birthday gift in 1954. It had Soviet military, Russian military bases. And there was a unique combination of this overwhelming desire of the local population to secede from Ukraine, the need to prevent military clashes on the peninsula, and Russian troops already stationed there. But since then, I think as a part of the breakdown of the narrative, the developments in southeastern Ukraine have been interpreted through the prism of Crimea, when in fact there is great local support for the rebels and a deep distrust of what has happened in Kiev in these last months on the part of the ethnic Russian population of southeastern Ukraine. Now, this is not to say that the military conflicts we've seen, rebels or the Ukrainian army are to be countenanced or to be condoned, because what's happened, Tom, is you know, and only recently, by the way, in the last 6 weeks, 2 months, have we seen the humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in southeastern Ukraine. But ordinary people are being caught up in this crisis, and we've witnessed a million Ukrainians displaced and close to 3,000 killed in the conflict. So it's just, there is a narrative that needs to be told and that gets lost, and I think the elites and the basic media coverage has gotten caught up in trying to equate what happened in Crimea with what is unfolding in southeastern Ukraine.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And in about a minute and a half, right now we're talking to about half our audience, our Pacific audience and our Free Speech TV audience. Our commercial stations will rejoin us in about a minute and a half, and I want to just restate that very quickly when that happens. But also there is this, there has been discussion in the press about Russia is trying to come up with a contiguous, basically, land bridge across southeastern Ukraine to Crimea. What do you think of that?
You know, I think that will provoke further tensions. I think that is going to be part of any negotiation that one hopes will unfold, because the bottom line is that it's time to end the blood and the horrors of this Ukraine conflict. But I think that is very tricky, but as I said, must be part of any political negotiation that is key. You know, one thing I wanted to say is that gets lost as well is one of the precipitating factors for the protests in November and February. First of all, the EU association agreement, what's often forgotten is that there were clauses in it that had military components. Who studied it carefully, it looked like a Trojan horse to get Ukraine into NATO. But those protests by Maidan and Maidan, the protesters, and all power to them, and I'll come back to it, Tom, if I might, had to do with something you and I care deeply about, which is corruption.
Sure. Okay. We'll continue this conversation in about 15 seconds. Katrina VandenHeuvel is with us, with the editor and publisher of The Nation magazine, thenation.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Katrina VandenHeuvel on the line with us, the editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. TheNation.com is the website. Katrina, just to recap, re-summarize the current situation in Ukraine.
Well, a ceasefire was put in place September 5th, negotiated by envoys from Ukraine, Russia, the rebels, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and it's broadly holding. Despite regular but sporadic violations, especially in key flashpoints such as Donetsk. However, inside Ukraine, putting aside Russia and the focus, obviously, in the narrative in this country on Russia, but you're seeing real divisions emerge between a president, Poroshenko, who says the only resolution of this conflict is a political one, the prime minister, Yatsenyuk, who this past weekend spoke to a conference in Kiev and said the only resolution is if Ukraine is in NATO, and NATO comes to its defense. And then in the southeast, you have the possibility of, because the Ukrainian army is collapsing, the emergence of paramilitaries, which have become something of a wild card in this conflict. Many of them include activists, blue-collar workers, professionals. But some of these units, like the Azov Battalion, have become a haven for far-right thought. And like the Russian rebels, the rebels themselves have been charged by Amnesty International with committing extortion, abuses, kidnapping. So you're seeing a fracturing that needs to be woven back together if there is going to be some possibility of what needs to happen, which is a ceasefire to end the bloody Ukraine conflict.
What should the United States be doing?
The United States, we spoke earlier about Germany. In Germany, Angela Merkel has played a constructive role for most of these weeks in being an interlocutor with Putin, but also Germany seeking a political resolution. What needs to happen if Ukraine is going to emerge as an economically viable country with the possibility of a democratic future, it needs to be a bridge between Russia and the West instead of a pawn. The IMF is already warning that the country's in free fall in terms of GDP. 27%, I think, of the industrial production of the country is in Southeast. The corruption is mounting, according to observers. So I think you need to strike, you need to drive as hard as you can toward a political resolution in which, as we've talked about, Tom, key issues such as the level of autonomy or what kind of federalism can be worked out, respect for the Russian language, local elections, respect and a stability. And, of course, the key thing, and this is where the prime minister is so incendiary, that Ukraine be non-aligned, like Finland or even Austria, and that it not be part of NATO, but that it have the possibility of working with both Russia and the West to develop a stable country. The narrative in this country, the media, Tom, needs to shift, but that's going to, you know, I will say one thing. I find that the generation of political and public discourse about Ukraine, about the conflict, harkens back to other bad eras in our time. There needs to be a marketplace of ideas, a range of views, but the lockdown in terms of a discussion of Ukraine in which you're accused of being pro-Russian, if you raise key questions about the narrative that so drives policy and debate in this country, is truly dispiriting. Even John Mearsheimer, major figure at the University of Chicago, major theorist of international relations, who wrote a very good piece I write about in my column, for Foreign Affairs, which is the, you know, esteemed establishment publication, is under fire from some in the field, including the former ambassador to Russia, U.S. Ambassador Michael McFaul. I mean, there should be a debate. There should be a debate, and we see that to a certain extent in places like Germany, which shows why there is a different kind of approach.
Yeah. Yeah, Germany's having a fairly active debate about this. I told Steve about this. I was in Germany a few months ago, and the newspapers were all about how many former prime ministers of Germany were saying, no, you know, NATO should not be going into Ukraine. This is crazy.
Well, we talked about one thing that often gets lost in all of this as well, Tom, which you bring back into the picture, is history.
Yeah.
You know, in 2004, NATO admitted 7 new members, including the Baltic states along the Russian border. And 4 years later, the George W. Bush administration failed to win acceptance. There was a fight. They wanted to win acceptance for Georgia and Ukraine. But that bid faced significant opposition from Germany and France.
Right.
So we've seen the understanding on the part of Germany about the danger of NATO expansion and how it has aroused the resentment, the grievances in Russia. And I think, it's very important that we hear those voices as well. And by the way, often it's said that, oh, Germany, they're doing it because they need the oil and gas. They've been bought. I don't think, I mean, that there are certainly trade ties important trade ties. But there's also a history and a memory in Germany, it seems to me, of the danger of baiting a Russia. Why not have a relationship with Russia that permits for a Europe that is independent but is not at war with, you know, and I'm talking Cold War with Russia.
Right.
That was, in fact, an important idea that former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, who really saw a more united Europe, including Russia, had spoken to and hoped for. And the roots of the conflict today, the NATO expansion, really shattered that promise.
Yeah, he had a deal with George Herbert Walker Bush that NATO would not take the Baltic states. I mean, Estonia has a direct border with Russia.
Lithuania. There's a dispute, Tom, but Russia ostensibly received from the George H.W. Bush administration, quote, NATO will not expand one inch to the east.
Right.
There is a dispute. Nothing was written down. Gorbachev himself regrets that. He comes under fire in Russia today for having capitulated and not driven a better deal with the United States, with NATO. But Russia today, we, you know, don't need to tell you, but if you look at what's going on in Ukraine, there's no question that Russia clearly views NATO expansion not only as provocative, but as a betrayal of an agreement.
Yeah. Well, just as Jack Kennedy did when the Soviets tried to put missiles in Cuba.
Cuba.
Yep. Yeah. Katrina Vandenhoevel, a brilliant, thoughtful piece. Strongly recommend it. TheNation.com, Time to End the Bloody Ukraine Conflict. Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you.
Great talking with you, as always.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you, as I said, you can find Katrina's article, and it really, really is worth reading, over at TheNation.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, a lot on our plate. We've talked about a lot of things today. And I see a lot of people still want to weigh in on topics from previous hours, which is fine. Greg, in New York City, you wanted to talk about In God We Trust as our national motto?
Yeah, Tom. Let me tell you something. I am a minister. Let me say that first of all. And let me tell you something. I believe in what Ted Kennedy once said. I'm tired of these rugged individualists who believe everything has to be hard for everybody but them. One of my concerns is that, if God We Trust was so important, then the legal system in America wouldn't be so detrimental to African Americans and other minorities. So, you know, they put words up there that are meaningless because they don't practice what they preach, number one. Number two, I believe in being a doer of the word rather than a hearer of the word. And you and I both know that if Jesus walked the earth today, they'd have them locked up for sedition, the conservatives, because they believe that he was a revolutionary because of his comments on the rich and others who are the powers that be during that time. So, you know, stop the nonsense and saying, putting these names up, talking about Ronald Reagan, who never went to church, and talked about, well, you know, God bless you. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we know he never went to church, and the conservatives always want to throw up God's name on everything, but it means nothing. It means nothing unless. What about doing something like helping the poor? What about doing something about not wanting to cut food stamps, wanting to give people health care? Be doers of the words instead of putting up words. That's my comment.
I'm with you, Greg. And in fact, you could even take it a step farther. If we were to literally say, "In God We Trust," that means that we would have to figure out a way. And you know, there's plenty of precedent for this. We'd have to figure out a way to determine what God's will is for every jury verdict. Instead of the jury coming up with a conclusion, it would have to be, what does God want? And we would. I mean, you know, the example in the early colonies before the Constitution was the state of Massachusetts. If a woman was charged with being a witch, they would throw her in a lake. And if she drowned, it meant that she wasn't a witch. And if she floated, it meant that she was a witch. This was God's way of telling us. Right. And so it's like, you know, what are we going to do? Start, you know, killing sheep and looking at their entrails? Hey, it's in the Bible. Or are we going to find Uma and Thurman, the two little lenses that Adam Smith said that he rediscovered and used to translate the golden tablets for the Book of Mormon? I mean, that's in the Bible as an old form of divination. Isn't, in a way, exactly. Couldn't you argue, Greg, that In God We Trust means that we have to completely rejigger our court system? We got to figure out what God thinks about things?
Exactly. Let's have a system like the Ayatollah there in Iran, where we can just have supreme leaders and some of the televangelists and some of these conservatives. Let's let them decide what who's guilty and who's not guilty, since they want to trust God to do it.
I'm not for that.
Because when I look at it in the courtroom, Tom, when I look at it, it means nothing. They don't practice what they preach.
Yeah, and if they did practice it, it could be damn scary. I'm with you, Greg. Thank you very much. It's good to hear from a pastor on this. Thank you very much for the call. Michael in Williamsburg, Indiana. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, on the God we trust, I think it, you know, Christianity and state should be separated.
Well, all religion and state should be separated, shouldn't they?
You know, are we ever going to escape Christian prosecution? You know, 80% of our laws, I bet, is based on Christian morals.
No, they're not, actually. Our laws existed, as Jefferson loved to point out, British common law existed for 200 years before Christianity was adopted by England. And, you know, there are tribes and communities and countries all over the world where they have the same basic moral code that we have here in the United States. And they've, you know, never read the Bible. They know nothing about Christianity. And in fact, most of the Ten Commandments are not part of our law. You cannot, you know, kill your children if they speak back to you. You can't be put to death if you claim that there's some God other than the original Jewish monotheistic God. You know, and on, a go, on and on it goes.
I don't know. It's just, I feel like I've had Christianity crammed down my throat.
Yeah.
Throughout my whole life.
Well, we all
Christian
have.
Ethnics.
Yeah.
And, I'm against all of it. You know, I'd rather study paganism, but I don't know anybody teaching it. You know what I mean?
Well, there are people, but I think that it's I think that comparative religion it's a good thing to study religion in a comparative context. And you know, here's how these people believe. Here's how these people believe. Here's how this got this way. But to be proselytizing for religion should not be a function of government. I'm with you, Michael. Thank you for the call, Patricia in Casco, Michigan. Hey, Patricia, in God we trust.
Oh, yep. It sure is, and I tell you what, I think it is discrimination pure and simple. Basically, because they want to name a religion. Well, I'm a Catholic, okay, and I know my history. And I know that before the United States was formed, Maryland was a Catholic colony. And what happened to it? The Puritans marched in and massacred the Catholics. Look what they did to JFK. It's like, okay, whose religion is right? You know, if you're going to believe in something, that's you personally. Okay, fine. Keep it out of government. Everybody has the right to believe in what they want to believe.
Yeah, very well said. I'm with you, Patricia. Thank you for the call. Curtis in Herman, Missouri. Hey, Curtis, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm getting there. May I weigh in just briefly on the In God We Trust debate discussion?
Please.
Well, you know, fear can be a very powerful motivator for people. And I kind of believe that, here we go, that fundamentalists, the ones that continue to try and impose their beliefs or their version of God on other people or free thinkers, I think that they may fear that their beliefs aren't right.
I agree. That was my original point, was the more evangelical somebody is, the less certain they are of their faith.
I think so, because they haven't thought it through, and therefore they need to impose it upon everyone else and to try and make our country into a theocracy.
Right, and every time they can convince somebody of their particular belief system, that causes them at some very deep level to say, oh, well, maybe I am right. Maybe this is true.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It answers their doubt.
Got it.
It answers
the got it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Curtis, thank you for the call. Well said. Tom in Fairfax, California. Hey, Tom. Upcoming climate march?
Hey there. Say, Tom, I know you've probably covered this topic a lot. I wanted to remind people about the upcoming march in New York City this Sunday. And I want to bring it up in a way that I think, and respectfully ask you to urge people to focus on this week. Maybe you can mention it once an hour. That I think we talk a lot about creating a parade for people to put out there for the leaders to get in front of, and I think this is just exactly such an opportunity. There are other rallies going on, not just in New York City, but all over the country.
Right.
In the Bay Area, there's one in Oakland happening on Sunday. And what really brought it to my mind, Tom, was seeing the film Disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally watched it, and I'm telling you, it is at the same time chilling and inspiring. And I didn't really understand the moment that is in front of us this weekend until I saw that film. So, if you could just please mention to people, maybe do it every hour. Just, have you watched Disruption today? Have you seen it yet? And if not, watch it, and then go find three people that you know need to see it. This is our moment. This is a very, very important moment. It's a fabulous film. You go to watchdisruption.com. I don't know if you've seen it yourself. But
I have.
Man, it's great.
Yeah, I saw it about 2 weeks ago.
So anyway,
I agree.
It's
a very good film. Tom, thank you for the call. Bob in Ontario, California. Hey, Bob. War?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I got cut off last week. I think it was my phone that did it, but it seems to go full circle every single week regarding the things that are going on around us. My first thing that I'd like to say, if I may, if anyone out there thinks that we can take on Russia in a war and step out of that clean, you're looking at a million dead Americans.
Russians, at a minimum.
As we well know, don't give up.
Yeah.
They just won't.
Yeah.
So the idea of war, which is an obsolete instrument as it stands right now, there are no victors in war. There's only dead civilians. Far outnumber the people who are armed and the aggressors.
Yeah.
But the idea of taking on somebody who is as powerful as we are is insanity.
Yeah.
And it has to be put to a stop right now. Anyone who thinks that we should be using a military step forward currently had better look at how far we've extended our borders already and how many different nations we are at war with currently. It's not just two. The people who know that.
Yeah.
But the idea of taking any more military aggressive action is absolute insanity.
Well, and our military is arguably our least effective tool to influence the behavior of other countries. And the good tools that we have, foreign aid, diplomacy, being a good example. I mean, it's been very difficult to be a good example since the Bush administration, but you know, those are the things where we should be focusing our efforts and our energies and supporting civil societies and supporting, you know, empowering women and girls and minorities in countries where they're being disempowered. I'm with you, Bob. Thanks a lot for the call. There are no victors in war. There are only dead people. War is organized mass insanity. It's legalized murder. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you're in D.C. this Sunday at 5 p.m. at Bus Boys and Poets at 5th and K Street, Dan Sisson and I will be talking and signing The Revolution of 1800. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Nancy watching Free Speech TV in Minneapolis. Hey, Nancy, you want to talk about ISIS?
Yes. You've heard the expression hiding the truth in plain sight.
Sure.
And when you look at the word ISIS and you put the I's on top of the S's, you get the U.S. dollar bill symbol. So when I hear we need to degrade and destroy ISIS, I wonder if they mean degrade and destroy the U.S. dollar, which may contribute to your theory about the crash of 2016.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, bin Laden was very, very clear that his mission was to bleed America dry. He had done that to the Soviet Union, and he wanted to do it to us. And he was delighted at how much money W. Bush spent, you know, on Afghanistan and Iraq. And it's an interesting idea. Thank you, Nancy. It hadn't occurred to me that if you put the I's on top of the S's, you get $2 signs. Sherry in Moncton, Maryland. Am I saying your name right? Or is it Sharig? SHARIGH, watching Free Speech TV in Moncton, Maryland.
Yes, Tom.
Hi. How do I say your name?
Hi. My name actually is Shariga.
Shariga. Shariga.
Yes.
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Actually, Tom, I'm listening. Of course, I'm one of the number one follower, I call in, around my people. We live in farm area. Listening to your program about in the God we trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I would wonder if you could first establish who is God we have to trust.
Right.
First. Because obviously our dollar is all over the world, and we have people from all over the world, including me, and we have, it seems to me, whoever you talk, they have a kind of their own designated or designed God, which is not similar to universal God that we have been taught.
Well, there's a... Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's many different faces of God if you want to just use the Jewish and Christian Bible. I mean, there's God the Avenger, there's God the Lover, there's God the God of War, there's the God who told Joshua to go to the city of Ai and kill every living thing, cut open the women, pregnant women's stomachs, kill the dogs. And then, you know, there's Jesus saying, you know, I will sacrifice myself for you. I mean, there's just this whole spectrum of who is God. It can be very confusing, I think. Which God do we want to be trusting in?
Exactly. Which one do we want to trust?
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at, you know, I mean, so much of what's going on in the Middle East right now is being done in the name of Allah and, you know, of God. And you know, arguably, we really messed that region up back in the 10th and 11th century with the Crusades. And on behalf of our idea of God, it's time to set it all aside. I'm with you. Thank you for the call. Very well said. We'll be back. Yeah. With you, got a bunch of calls in a little bit of time, so let's try to be brief. Mike in Walkertown, North Carolina. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom. Glad to talk with you. I'm really amazed that you can hold your composure when some of these callers call in. But in the dictionary, the word faith, some of your callers said they had a Christian faith. Faith mm-hmm. is a strong belief in God or in the doctrines of a religion based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof.
Right.
So they're actually believing that something's not actually proven.
Right. And not demonstrable, at least not with current technology. I'm with you. And that's why I kept asking, you know, I forget who the caller was, but, you know, how do you know? Well, I believe. No, believing and knowing are different things. Excellent point, Mike. Thank you for calling and making it. Nathan in Chino Hills, California. Hey, Nathan.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Great Bay fan. Love your show. Really great. Anyways, I have a quick comment to make. If the representatives in the Senate and in the House, if they all want to go ahead and run for office, go let them go ahead. If they want to go ahead and bring up, you know, God and saying, like, God's with me, go ahead. And if they can go ahead and decide to say, like, you know, like Todd Akin saying, oh, yeah, illegitimate rape is God's intended will. And you can just go ahead and turn around and saying, well, I guess not this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
Hey,
yeah.
Quick comment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Sanders and Warren 2016 sticker? What's going on with that one in the back, right behind you?
I got it in the mail, and I thought it was kind of cool. So somebody, you know, made one, mailed it to us, and I put it on the, you know, on the wall.
Are they actually running?
No, they're not. There's no such campaign. It's just, you know, anybody can make any bumper sticker that says anything they want, and somebody made that one. I thought it was just, it's a hoot. Nathan, thanks a lot for the call. Chandler in Palm Springs, California. Hey, Chandler, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just have two possibly very stupid questions. I'm 67. This is deja vu all over again with entering another conflict, as you well know. Well, my first question is, why is anyone on Fox News, like Cheney and McCain and Graham, why are they referring to or having won the war in Iraq? There was no war that was won in Iraq. And my second question is, what are we training adults, grown people to do in Iraq and Syria? What is the training that we have to be there to do? You're trying to tell me that all those years they weren't trained? What is it? Why
no,
they not defend themselves?
They had a very sophisticated military, and they had, you know, war colleges, and they sent people all over the world to learn these things. And when Paul Bremer debathified the Iraqi army, a lot of those people got kicked out, and that's why they've joined ISIS. But B, if we're going to continue to supply them with high-tech weaponry, you know, surface-to-air missiles, long-range mortars, things like that, we have to train them in how to use this stuff. So for our military defense contractors to continue making the hundreds of billions of dollars that they're making so that the multimillionaire CEOs who live in the 34-bedroom mansions that surround the city of Washington, D.C., for that to continue, we have to train them in how to use our weaponry. Make sense, Chandler?
I'm sorry.
Does that make sense?
Yes, but it doesn't, as you
well
know.
No, I agree. It's
productive.
I agree. It's crazy, but it's, you know, we have to train them in how to use the weaponry that we are selling or giving to them so that we can continue to transfer your tax dollars and mine to these giant defense contractors. Chandler, thanks for the call. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mr. Hartman, I just want to lighten the atmosphere here, man.
Okay.
This Ukraine stuff and this religion stuff is just depressing. I was wondering, when you had to get out of your hotel room in underwear, like the infamous question that they asked President Bill Clinton, were they boxers or were they briefs? Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Michael. It was briefs, and I hope they were clean. Barry in Chicago. Hey, Barry. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up? You wanted to talk about Boko Haram?
One quick thing. On Frontline last week, there was two segments. The first segment was on Ebola. The second segment was on Nigeria. And they showed that the Nigerian military and other people in Nigeria are just rounding up people and killing them, thinking that they're Boko Haram and making no attempt to try to figure out whether they are or not. So the Nigerian military is being just as bad as Boko Haram.
Or incompetent and indiscriminate. Thank you, Barry, for sharing that. Scott in Nottingham, Maryland. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom, just real quick, two things. Mm-hmm. First, when you say in God we trust, that's very vague. That could be Muhammad, that could be Buddhism, that could be pretty much anything.
Right.
So I think they were trying to do that because they say, you know, basically that this country is the freedom of religion. So that's one thing. The second thing is, if you really want to drive these conservatives nuts, name the Redskins the Washington Saviors, and then have a picture of Jesus on the cross, and then they will be yelling and saying how blasphemous that is. But then they can name the Washington Redskins the Redskins, which is a name that's very derogatory to Indians.
Right.
But name them the Saviors, and that'll change the whole discussion. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Washington Saviors. Thank you, Scott. Well, yeah. I mean, you got a fair number of politicians in this town who kind of think they are the Saviors. It's Well, we're down to 20 seconds. 20 seconds, yeah, it's not enough time to put another caller on. But just let me say, if I walk into a courtroom and the criteria that's being used to judge me is God, then you know, hey, that's Sharia law, right? That's religious law. And in my understanding of American history, and I'm fairly well read in the topic, that is inconsistent with the history of the United States, is inconsistent with the philosophy of the United States. It's not who we are. We do not impose our religious beliefs on, our government does not impose religious beliefs on civilians, on our citizens. Shouldn't happen. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back tomorrow, of course. And don't forget, in the interim, there's an election coming up. It's really important that you're registered to vote, that you know when and where and how to vote, and that you can get at least a half a dozen friends to go along with you, or get out there and vote, because this is an important election. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Okay, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.